that was huge. That moment of courage. It was like, you never know how other people, how many people are looking at you, how you respond to your worst moments, your most humbling moments. Those tell more about you, truthfully, than when you're hosting something.
That's right.
Or when you just hit a wall. Invest in your people because it's a game of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You develop a relationship, it develops energy. You develop energy, it develops effort. You develop effort, it develops work ethic, and you develop work ethic, that develops a really good plan. That's where you want to get to.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, welcome back to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, your home for certified audio gold and your podcast home where you connect with some of the very best baseball minds in our game. Man, do we have an absolute gem of a show waiting for you in the on-deck circle, but just hang tight, guys. It's coming soon. First and foremost, thank you. We appreciate the loyal listeners out there, and this is their 72nd installment of the show, and many of those multiple times over. And then there's the new listeners, the rookies who are dialing in. Huge thanks to those folks. Guys, this is a podcast for lifelong learners, a platform for those of us who don't have all the answers, and we actually embrace that. We love to challenge ourselves to be constantly learning and growing inside the game. And if all that sums you up to a T, welcome and thanks for dialing us in. Always with the reminder here, subscribe, review, and share. Make sure you're locked in and subscribe to the podcast on your phone, your tablet, your computer. You'll never miss the release of a show when you do that. Leave us a review on there, plus a 5-star rating. This is going to help more baseball people out there find this show. And then, of course, go the extra step and share this show. Throw a tweet out there, send it in a text group. Help us continue to spread the great word about the ABCA, but also help more people connect with these terrific guests, their messages that are coming through the airwaves. So thanks for your help on that. If you want to connect with me, please never hesitate to reach out. You can find me on Twitter at ABCA1945 and also at CoachSheets3, or connect with me by email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. Now, I've got to tell you this before we hit play on this show. Buckle in. I mean, this is special. Make sure you're ready to get challenged, coaches, as we connect with the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, Clint Hurdle, and boy, does he bring it inside this episode. Fun fact is that we recorded this show live on the Pirates team bus on the way to their first spring training game of 2018. It's an absolute pro move from Clint on this one, but inside are powerful stories. I mean, complete transparency across every front and a true introspective view of his growth in baseball, but also as a leader and as a communicator, and more importantly, his growth as a man. Huge honor to connect on and off air with Clint. We've had tremendous conversations, and just to be clear, it's been motivating for me, and I think our listeners might land in that same place after you hear his story about growing up, riding the roller coaster of life through all its ups and downs, plus his perspective on keeping it simple and serving others. That doesn't whisper through your earbuds on this one. It's going to reach out and grab you, and you'll love every second of it. And with this show, I plan to start measuring my days with the number of wows that I drop, but also how many times I just fall back in my chair, taken back by a profound message, and it's going to happen to you too, I promise. So let's dive headfirst into this one as we connect with Pittsburgh Pirates manager Clint Hurdle on today's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And get ready, coaches, because this great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, thanks for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Fired up, doesn't begin to even come close to the excitement I got for today's interview as we connect with the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, Clint Hurdle. Clint, thanks for jumping on the call with us.
Sheets, good morning.
Pleasure is all on this side of the phone call, my friend. Now, here's what's really cool, man. You are on the team bus heading to kick off 2018, taking on the Rays today. Obviously, fired up about the season, fired up about the expectations for what's going on there in Pittsburgh.
Oh, we're excited for the... It's a new opportunity. It's actually a new Pirates baseball we're all embarking upon.
Yeah.
You know, when Andrew was traded to San Francisco, he's been the face of the franchise. He's been an iconic player.
Right.
A lot of individual awards, playoff experiences. So when he goes, it's a different deal. as we shared with the men in the clubhouse now, we're going to honor the past. There's many that have come before us. We're going to own the present because it's truly the only day that we're guaranteed is today, and then we're going to create our own future together rather than wait to have it created for us. So there's excitement, and there's an energy that's always prevalent in spring training, but with the number of young players we have with this year, it's just a different vibe.
Sure. Oh, that's awesome, man. I'm hoping a couple things come from this interview, Clint, and I'm going to be very forthright with you. One is you're going to deliver some certified audio gold for our guys, but another one is I hope that somebody from the Permanti Brothers franchise organization hears this interview and they want to sponsor this podcast, because if you had Permanti Brothers in my office every day, I'd be a very happy dude.
Yeah, there's a fight there you're asking for, because how many sandwiches stuffed with French fries, so I'm sure you're doing a lot of work.
Yeah,
away from the podcast,
right?
Down right now, the Permanti Brothers. It's special. It is special.
There is no doubt.
I hope something good happens from this. Yeah,
it certainly will, man. So, 2 years ago, just to give our listeners some context, 2 years ago, you came and spoke. We're at the USA Baseball National Member Organizational Meeting, and you and Neil Huntington came in, and we were in Philly, and you guys were in town, and you gave us a really, really cool behind the curtains view of the culture that's inside the Pirates organization. And if we could, Clint, I just want you to kind of unravel that a little bit, but talk about your role within solidifying that across the entire organization.
Well, my role, when I sat down with the interview process to be hired as the manager, I shared an interview with Neil Huntington, Bob Betting, and then Frank Kunle, the president, Frank, and the team owner, Bob, of course, Neil, our general manager. I listened to them paint me a picture of where they had been, where they were right there, the vision of where they were going, the development of the program in Latin America, the reignition there, the fertilization, the harvesting of the farm club, where they'd been right there. And unfortunately, at the major league level, they'd just come off 2 seasons, lost 212 games. So they were looking for experience in the dugout, experience in that first chair, experience for somebody to help lead a group in the clubhouse. And also to win games.
That's right.
Because let's be frank, winning games is important.
Mm-hmm.
I had some opportunity. I had another opportunity somewhere else. But as we sat down, I was led to Pittsburgh. I had a lot of prayer out there. We had managed. I had managed in Colorado. And I was coming off a season where I was a hitting coach in Texas.
That's
it was
right.
A tremendous fit. It was a good fit. We'd just gone to the World Series.
Yeah.
Good man, good organization. And so I came in with the understanding that I don't have to manage to validate or to define myself. I was going to look for the right fit. After a number of interviews, the fit became real. It was like a good pair of jeans where I could wear it with flip-flops and a Hawaiian shirt, or I could go low with the deck.
Love it.
Then the culture part of it was looking men and now talking about women, because it's something they hadn't done a lot of. And then it was also about the development of the entire man, which Bob and Frank and Neil had already started scratching the surface on. Kyle Stark, a farm director at the time, was now assistant general manager. We believed in growing up the player as well as the man. There's two sides to every coin, and there's actually a third part, the edge, that's real. The edge holds both other sides together.
That's right.
But we wanted to truthfully, one of our mission statements, to grow boys into men,
yep,
and men into leaders. And that, you're going to ask later, we're going to talk about a why, but that's my why.
That's it. Boys
grow into men and men into leaders. So that was that's what we pushed off from shore. We started there. There was a lot of heavy lifting at the beginning. We've gotten to a good place. And then we've had turn bits, as you're going to find resistance when you're hunting good. When
that's
you hunt
right.
What's right, what smells right, what walks right, you're just going to be resistant from time to time. It doesn't mean bad. Resistance just means it's another way to maybe recommit to your core principles or values, or find it time to adjust or change some ideas and some exercises and some beliefs. That's why they're called beliefs. They're not called truths. You know, we continue to learn and educate ourselves throughout this process. So that's the culture is one. We want the players to own it. We want the players to run it. We want them to be professional. We want them to be relentless. We want them to own the opportunity they have to make a significant difference in the lives of those men in the clubhouse, as well as our entire organization and the people of the city of Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's awesome. You just kind of opened up walking into my spider web on where this conversation's going. And I know for our listeners that they can hear that there's going to be some real gold coming in a few questions, but I want to get to this first. I kind of want to walk backwards and then we'll keep walking back to the present. But, you know, pre-high school, you know, in those early days of you really getting in and playing baseball, there's always a point. Baseball is exactly what I want to be doing. There's no other sport. Forget basketball, forget football. But some of us don't. We play a lot of sports, but there's a moment, maybe it's a coach, maybe it's a game, maybe it's a season where the game just changes. Do you have that moment inside your childhood where the game just became a passion?
Truly, it was more than a hobby. Something that was fun to do from the beginning. From the time I was 5, played for the Yankees at the age of 6 in Little League. The fun part about my age, when we played Little League at 6, we pitched it.
Yeah.
There was no coach pitch, there was no t-ball. We struck it out when I played. It was ugly. I mean, you're talking 32 to 28, you know,
sure. A lot of walks.
That was a big thing. Strike was really cool.
Yeah.
That was the first strike at that time. So it was passion. I can remember early on, my dad, you know, he said that he's working at the Space Center, so we had astronauts that were cool. There was a lot of good men we had known in our neighborhood. We had some police, we had a couple of policemen, there were a couple of firemen, guys that worked at the Space Center. Astronauts were a lot of people's idols living in East Coast of Florida, right next to Cape Canaveral.
Yeah.
Well, I looked at my dad and I said, I want to be a pro baseball player. I want to be a ball player. I want to play the pros. And that carried on for a while. I was fortunate to even do Little League. I was a really good player. We always had one player. I mean, we had that kid. His name was Waldo Williams. That when we were 12, you know, he had a mustache,
yeah.
And he was 6 foot tall.
Sure.
And he was 185-pound ripped.
Yep.
So it was like, well, I'm not the best player in the league, but I'm pretty good. But there was good Waldo. And as I went up, Waldo was a senior when I was a sophomore in high school. And that's bad when sophomore was tough day.
Yep.
And all the baseball scouts were coming to see Waldo. He was a two-way sports star at Maryland High School, went on to play the scholarship for state track above yours. But they were all coming to see Waldo. And then we had a game, and I was a sophomore. I made the club. I'm playing every day. And I can remember walking to get my dad after the game. My man, I got arrested. I just walked up to me. He goes, I just want to tell you something, young man. I said, excuse me, sir. He goes, yeah, I just wanted to tell you. I came to watch Waldo Williams play today, but I'm scouting the wrong guy. We got our eyes on you from this point on. Never told his name.
Wow.
Never told me who he was with. That was my game changer in a good way. It didn't freak me out. It didn't put pressure on me. It was like, you know what? You got a game. Go
sure.
Play your game. You don't have to be anybody else. You don't have to compare. Just go play.
Wow. That's awesome. That's a great story. I appreciate the history on that. And that brings us right to, you know, in 75, you're a first rounder at a high school. And the question I want to ask is, there's a whole lot of different ways we could go, but I'm interested. What would you say to that 18-year-old Clint that's taken that opportunity to go play professional baseball? What did that kid not see coming that if you could sit him down right now, you'd let him in on?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask that, because last year, one of the writers in Pittsburgh, I had brought up, he asked my son, I said, did you read the letter that Doc Gooden wrote, the letter to myself, my younger self?
Yes.
The Players Tribune had a little series of articles about the letter to my younger self.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? He goes, I'd like to do one of those on you. So we did one. And if you look up the guy, somebody if they're listening, Stephen Nesbitt, Nesbitt, Stephen with the Peach, was the writer, and it's just a letter to my younger self that we scripted out last year. And there were so many just simple truths that I would share. I fell into some man traps later on. They could be woman traps too. I don't know, but my walk, I fell into comparison mode, which too bad, two things happened. Either one's good. You either get envious and somebody else is better, you get prideful because you're better than somebody else.
Yeah.
I probably thought that everybody would have my best interest in mind. I was a little naive. I didn't go to college. I learned so many valuable lessons can be learned at college.
Right.
Get out, get away from home. You got to figure things out. You show up, you do good. You don't show up, you skip classes, and you do bad. That wasn't a part of my, I didn't have an option to not show up, but going from being that big fish in a small high school pond to playing professional ball, being another good player, a lot of good players. of being 18, 19 years old in Waterloo, Iowa, hitting a buck 80, 60 games into my first season, and being a number one draft, and it was hard, man. I was far away from home. I was experiencing adversity like I never had. So, keeping things simple. Feelings aren't facts. I had a lot of feelings that were confusing me at the time when I was shot. The other thing was, there's, for me, the faith piece, my relationship with Christ was always in play. I kind of unplugged it. I said, I got this. I'll take over. Let me do the driving for a while. And
that's right.
I lost my North Star. And I misplaced my North Star. But basically, the three things, don't compare. You're good enough, you wouldn't have been there. Number three, don't. However, remain true to yourself and find a good group, a posse of people that you can count on that will speak truth to you and tell you when you're posting up, tell you when you're out of line. And to walk better, walk right, if you're smarter, that's a bad decision. What were you thinking there to help learn you up? I use that adage, maybe somebody else listening is using. I continue to use it. I got myself into this mess. I'll get myself out. That's just bad. That's bad game plan,
right? Yeah, right.
We all, there's people in our lives that love us, that are smarter than us, that have different skills than us, that we can count on to help our development.
I'm hearing comparison is the thief of joy, and I'm hearing surround yourself with great people.
Yes, sir.
There it is. Wow. This is just going a little off script, but is there any feeling in your gut that maybe that kid should have gone to college? I know you had an opportunity to go to Miami, could have gone to Harvard, probably some other schools. Is there any place in your heart that's like, maybe if, or you walked your path and you're where you're at?
I probably got to those points and started scratching those itches, but then it goes back to component.
That's right. That's a good point.
And I made my decision, and then I figured out what can I learn on the decision. And fortunately, now later on down the road, I've actually had some people reach out and share with me. They'll say, "Hey, Mr. Hurdle, man, I've got no other plan or whatever. Hey, you should have really good judgment there. How do you get good judgment?" Which is a great question. I'd say, well, this is a great question. So I get it through experience.
That's right.
You go, how do you get that experience? I said, through bad judgment.
That's it. That's a good point.
I mean, that's how you learn. So the part, I think it would have been a different road, though. I wouldn't. There's a really good chance I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't trade where I am today for anything.
That's it.
Not my wife, not my kids, not the lessons learned, not the successes, the triumphs, the hard parts, the failures. God's had me the whole way. The script has already been written. My job is to be responsible and post up for him every day for thy will to be done, not my will, and let it play out the way it plays out, bring out and glory to him. The responsibilities I have in my job now and my responsibilities at home with my family. If I show up every day, Chief, and try to be the best servant I can be, the best husband I can be, the best father I can be, the best friend I can be, how about the best brother I can be? And then the best manager's down the list. That's important, but it's down the list. I don't have time for lollygagging through my day. My day's full, right?
That's
there.
Right, no doubt. Oh, we're going to come back to that one. Early years. So this is you retiring in 87. This is you in 88 becoming an A-ball manager. I just want to let you know, just for we're all on the same page here. In 1988, I was 7 years old. I was trying to learn cursive in second grade. I just want to make sure that you and I are on even playing field here, okay? So in 88, now you're working your way through the minor leagues. You're obviously trying to get in, figure this whole thing out. I'm just wondering, when you get into coaching, what was motivating you then to coach? Why did that seem like the right route for you at that time?
It basically started to happen when my playing career took a turn. I thought it was a wrong turn.
Okay.
But I went from playing a lot to becoming more of an extra man, a bench player.
Mm-hmm.
That conversion happened probably after the 81 season. I joined the Reds. That didn't go well. I started bouncing around. Met a manager in AAA in the minor leagues after Davey Johnson, who went on to have a wonderful major league career.
Sure.
Played, of course, then as a manager. Yes, I started playing third base, never played third base. And then he asked me to catch, started catch. So I started playing five positions. So my focus on the game, the lens I had for the game, just playing right field, showing up every day, trying to figure things out. Then a little first base when I got to the big leagues, trying to figure things out. the catching thing opened the whole game up for me.
Sure.
Seeing the game in a whole different lens. So it was probably 85 season when I got back to the big leagues, 85, 86, 87. Spent that time in the big leagues with the Mets and the Cardinals really as a extra player. Mm-hmm. I backed up the corner outfielders, I backed up the corner infielders, I backed up the catcher. But now, working with pitchers, watching the game, getting to play once in a while, and then learning that when I did play, I didn't have to go 5 for 3 so I could play tomorrow, I was giving that guy a break.
That's right.
Better, you know? Sure. And Rusty Staub gave me some great advice when I got to New York and started my career really as an extra player, a bunch player. He said, you know, I see you putting a lot of pressure on yourself. You're trying to win the game every time you go up. He says, do you realize that if the manager thought you could win the game from the start, you'd be in the lineup? He said, you got nothing to lose.
That's
said,
right.
You get one shot. You go up there, you see something you like, get after it. You know, and you got nothing to lose. You're giving somebody a break. That day you get the start, the manager's smart because he's giving you 4 at-bats just to hold your swing, to see some pitches. You know, to sink it all back up. Those games, you go up there and Lee Smith's on the mound and the shadows at Wrigley, and we're down 2-1 and you haven't played in 2 weeks, you really think it's all on you? Those other guys have already been up there 3-4 times and haven't got nothing done. We got one run. So
right.
Let it rip. Let it eat. Those experiences, that put me in a position sitting when I decided to stop this. You know what? There's a lot of valuable things I've learned. I've played every day. I've platooned. I've played off the bench. I went to a World Series. I played in a lot of good teams, even in the minor leagues, so I understand the winning component, the culture that I've had a lot of adversity in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that I could help share, really share experience, strength, and hope with young men to help them develop by what I've been through.
That's awesome. And the experiences you've had, being a first rounder, whatever pressure that comes with, being young in this game, working your way through the minors and the playing up on the big league level. But more than that, your experiences on the big league level, being a starter, being an everyday guy, then being a bench role or a role player. Do you feel like that helps you relate to players better? Because you've seen it from, like you said, the positional work. But I mean, just even in your name showing up on the lineup card, you've seen it from so many different angles. Does that allow you to connect with the superstar at the same time, connect with the guy that really wants to break in and become an everyday guy?
Actually, the superstar is the toughest challenge.
Sure.
And I figured out with the coaching over and over again as we developed our relationship that took place over 7 years. We got to really, I believe, and I think he actually penned it in his letter to the fans of Pittsburgh. If you've not read his letter to the fans of Pittsburgh, it is a fantastic letter written by a man who gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one paragraph in there about our relationship, which is as humbling a thing as I've ever had a player share with me. He shared it on the phone with me before he wrote it. But I do believe that gave me an opportunity that I'd bring Andrew in. And when I told myself, I said, first of all, I have no idea what a silver bat is. I got no idea what a gold glove is. Our conversations more or less took place when he was struggling.
Wow.
And I said, I got that.
Yeah.
I got the struggle piece. Trust me on this one. I give him some situations and some things. And that's where we would work. I said, this other stuff, kid, you're special. I have no understanding of what it's like to make 4 All-Star teams, to what it's like to be an MVP. So I honor that. I respect that. But here's the part that I do have for you that I think is going to help, and I think it will encourage you. And that's probably one of the biggest reasons our relationship grew as strong as it did over the years is there's a big bandwagon of friends and things are going good.
That's
and
right.
Things aren't going good. That your posse really can shrink and dwindle when you find out who is and who isn't. So those are the times I had opportunities before than anybody else. I said, hey, I got this.
Right.
I know how to feel today.
Now I want to walk step by step with you here. And I know I gave this to you in one big question, but I think breaking it up might be the best way to go about it. So we're talking about all your time in baseball, working out your way up through the minors into the Rockies organization, serving as the Rangers hitting coach now with the Pirates. And I want to take this segment by segment. I want you to discuss your growth, Clint, as a teacher of baseball. How have you grown as a teacher?
I've moved to change every year of play. New things. You continue to develop relationships with players, coaches, front office.
Yeah.
The role of the manager has changed over the years. The role of the coach has changed over the years. They're vital. They've got a heartbeat. They're important. The phrase we like to use here is a coach, manager. We want to have a white belt in mentality. Ooh. And that's predicated on the caste system, the belt system in karate. When you first walk in the door, you know nothing. You have an opportunity to learn everything, so they give you a white belt. And we want to put on that white belt every day. And I've learned probably, see, in the last 10 years, I've learned more than I did in the previous 20 about measuring the game.
Yep.
In the last five, the analytics have popped up, which has been a whole other field of play to enter into to stick your toe in.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably the most important element of today's game is the ability to relate socially. X's and O's are what they are. Strategy is what it is. You can be a really good manager. Mm-hmm. You got really good players. You don't have to be as good a manager. They're going to take care of it. They're going to take care of everything. When you get the combination of experience and then making moves that make sense, or you're not trying to play the game, you're being proactive and trying to put your people against it, the good manager can show up. I continue to learn. I continue to be humbled. I know a couple things are for sure. Number one, change is going to happen. That's one thing you can guarantee. Change will happen. Number two is nobody's right 100% of the time, so I need to surround myself with good people that have better skill sets than I do in certain areas so I can depend upon them for the betterment of myself and our players.
Wow. Dive into communicator. You know, your growth as a communicator, I'm sure, early on, trying to figure out how to relate, coming off being a player, but that certainly has grown. It's like you mentioned, even part of the last 10 years, your communication skills have certainly enhanced. Can you open that up?
The way I look at it is every player has a belt, and they have a lock on that belt, and you got to have a bunch of keys. This is one key that works for player A is not going to work for player B.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know where this kid come from, small town, big town. Parents been married 35 years, raised by a single mom. Some of them raised by a single dad. Some of them came from toxic family relationships. Some of them came from good family relationships. Some of them had 15 hitting coaches before they get to a minor league program. Some of them been playing on their own the whole time. So you need to know the story. First thing of all, you need to know the story. You need to paint a picture. And you get them to help. And what we do is I sit down and talk to the player. I want to know the wife. I want to know the kids. I want to know significant people in his life, coach, dad, mom, whoever it was. Maybe I'll reach out to them. I also share with them the icebreaker for me, and it's been this one for a long time. And it started in Colorado when I first put it out there, because I've had these three questions. From the time I remember going into JV football, and the coach pulled me aside, I went out for quarterback, I went out for safety, and the coach brought me in and said, you're going to be a tight end. What? So I said, okay. Three questions were this then in seventh grade, and they've been this today. I'm walking through with players right now.
Yeah.
Can I trust you? Do you care about me? And will you make me better?
Gosh.
No player is going to let you coach him up. As good a coach as you think you are, no player lets you coach him up. No player listens to you and lets you coach him up until they trust you. And it takes time to earn the trust, and you better not set a clock or a date or a deadline. It takes what it takes. Once that day happens and that day arrives, that player trusts you, now you have an opportunity. Now you need to be aware and alert, because you never know when that coaching opportunity comes in. You better show up and coach them up. Not over coach them. Not wait till they stop talking so you can start. Listen to them, hear them, give them one thought, and then boom, you're on your way. The other thought does, do you care about me? Am I more than a middle infielder with that skill, that average speed? There's a barrel in there that plays, soft hands. And you know my number. You don't know my name. You don't know where I come from. You don't know what I've been through.
Sure.
Those three questions are critical for developing relationships with my staff, with the players, with the front office. I ask those three questions to the pirate organization when I interview here. And I ask them to these players today, and I tell them, we will earn your trust. It's not something you just walk in the door. Back when I played, you walk in the manager's door, two things happened, both were bad. You either got sent down or you got yelled at.
Right.
That's what it was.
No doubt.
I'm not saying it was wrong. That's just what time it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I get players coming through. I mean, it's awesome. Because sometimes they're in and out throughout the day. Hey, my kid. Hey, my wife. Hey, my swing. Hey, you know, the fourth inning the other night, I felt, and I've had coaches and buzz and gosh, they did. Do you ever get a break? I said, you know what? I don't know if I'll ever get a break. I do know this. When I stop coming through that door, that's going to be trouble. That's going to be an impossible.
That's right. That's a great point. So, wow. All right. Last one I got for you, man. And you just, there's going to be some value in this one as well. Your growth as a servant leader. And I love that phrase and I love that mentality. And I just want you to really open that up. Your growth as a servant leader.
It started back in Colorado when I met a man. I was fortunate through some hard times in my life. Mm-hmm. There's probably a lot of people out there that, he's been twice divorced, not proud of it, recovering alcoholic, 19 years sober. Mm-hmm. I'm a flawed man. I work hard every day to be a better man. I try to be a simple man in a complex world. But the team president of the Rockies, Kelly McGregor, started pouring into me in 2001 when he came on the job. Younger than me, used to drive me crazy. How can a guy younger than me? That's so much right. Smarter than me. He was 6'9". He was all American tight end at Colorado State. He played the NFL. He knew nothing about baseball. He knew everything about life and people.
Wow.
He started pouring into me. He started challenging me about my relationship at home with my wife. Why are you getting divorced twice? How's your relationship with your oldest daughter? You ever think of having kids in the future? What's going to be different this time? He started, Ken, my ears, but with just quality questions.
Working on you.
You want to talk about molding and shaping and sanding and honing and bending.
Wow.
We'd have these discussions twice a week. We'd go out, take a walk, get a cup of coffee, and then lo and behold, 2002. You know, 2 months into the season, I get named the manager. And now Kelly and I have a whole different relationship. Mm-hmm. It's team president, manager. But he kept working on me. And then I got to the point where I was able to share some thoughts. The leadership became real because I became real. I actually recommitted my life to Christ. Mm-hmm. Around the age of 40. I used Jesus as an ATM card for 23 years. I was saved at 17 and Jesus is an ATM card, which is sad. Jesus knows it, and I've apologized. And I recommitted. That started it. I got sober. That started it. And then I said, you know what? I need to serve others. My responsibility, as long as I'm in any chair, the chair at home, the chair as a manager, the chair as a coach, the chair as a friend, the chair as a brother, the chair as a son, is to serve others and to make whoever's job easier than it is right now. Not harder. So that has been the map that I've been following ever since Kelly and I started hooking up. And then a sad day came, a very sad day, when Kelly passed away in 2010, in late April. And I was with the Rangers. I was in Fenway Park, and I went out to the monster, and I cried. And I connected with some people. And at that point in time, there was another level of commitment that I needed to put in place. Where, I do say, what would Jesus do? There's a part of me every once in a while saying, what would Kelly do to this day? The man helped shape me. My dad and Kelly are the two men in my life at the top. They play behind Jesus. Jesus gets to start now. They come in and out. Those three figures, Jesus, my father, and then Kelly McGregor, have been the men that poured into me to help me change my life for the better and to make a difference by serving others.
That is super powerful. I want to go into this. You've already opened up so much on your why in coaching, what drives you today, but how are you still challenging that each and every day? What are maybe the routines that are inside making sure that your why is challenged and you're still learning, you're still growing? Can you open that up?
Well, yeah, I've got a Mount Rushmore of people in my life. I've got four men that I stay connected to spiritually, scripturally, personally, professionally. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like having a board of directors that I'm accountable to.
Sure.
And we connect, and it's amazing how much they help me in my profession without being in my profession, just because it's more of that relationship based. Then when it comes to the part of baseball, I work for a tremendously smart general manager, Neil Lang, is a good man. I work with Kyle Stark, who's one of the smartest people I ever met. Actually, I think he's Kelly's brother, somewhere along the line. Another guy younger than me, a cat that just brings it every day, spiritually, professionally. So he helps me continue to grow. Rod Olson, in Colorado, Brad Anderson, Apple leader in Pittsburgh, Scott Whitaker, Steve Schroeder, people, some of these guys I know, these men are important to me. These men are important to my world. Nathan Whitaker, who's co-written about half a dozen of Tony Dungy's books, is one of my guys. I'll talk to him later today I need to continue to grow. I need to continue to search. You know what? We just went through a situation here with the clubhouse culture. We had some players who weren't happy. And some players that became very vocal. The narrative was out there. And I think in times of conflict or crisis, you know, in the past, I probably would have stepped into it, been ready to flex and vote.
Right.
And now, I've more experience. I needed to take a step back, make sure I heard them. I've had conversations with them over the winter. They were real. I had conversations with every player over the winter as we made our trade and formed our vision. And then I needed to self-reflect. Okay, when criticism happens, we don't like it. We get confrontation. We get mad. We get angry. I took a step back. So, okay, what part do I need to wear? What part is true? Is there truth? Find the truth. And I did. And then I reached back. I built a bridge instead of building a barrier.
That's it. Yeah.
And I just respond to one as an organization. There's a lot of, there still is public angst. There is a lot of collateral damage from trading McCutcheon, from trading Cole. If you walk in our clubhouse now, you never know that we just walked through some turbulence together. But the important part is we went through them together. There was no match. Aaron, he said, she said, in the paper, we just get in front of each other and talk. I'll never be one to tell, man, here, you need to say this. They need to say what they need to see, then they need what they need to say, then they need to feel what they need to feel. Mm-hmm. And then we need to find the truth, hear from me, hear from whoever else we need to put in place. Everybody's not going to agree on everything, but once the conversation's over, we're going to open that door and walk out. We need to be locking arms and going, and that's what we do.
Now, this is the first time I've asked this question, Clint, and I think it could continue to be a staple of this show, and I'm interested to see what you would offer. How do you define success?
Oh, that's a good one.
as long as you sign off on it, we'll keep it.
But I've had a lot of different definitions over the years, but the one I grew into a while ago was, number one, I don't need to be a success for somebody else to say I'm a success. Mm-hmm. You know, John Wooden's definition of success is the best one I've ever come across. It's the one that I wear. When I am prepared, when I am focused, when I go out and play to the best of my capabilities, coach the best of my capabilities, manage the best of my capabilities, at the end of the day, I may not be good enough to have won the game that day, but I was successful in what I could do and what I could control to present an opportunity to win the game. We talk about dominating our control of this year, not just controlling it. Winning is important, but if I'm just a win column and a loss column, I mean, look at my career record, man, I lose you right now. As a pilot manager, I'm a winner. I mean, it lapses in time. You can be this and this and this, depending upon other people's expectations.
Right.
I don't own up to other people's expectations. I've learned in my life when I set expectations for others, sheets, more often than not, they turn into resentments.
Yeah, sure.
I'm expecting, well, sheets should be able to do this. He should be able to do that. I've got this all figured out. And when you don't get there, I get mad at you.
Yeah, exactly.
I can be mad at me because I was wrong.
Sure.
My evaluation. You know, God forbid, I could be wrong. No, you didn't hit the mark, man. You didn't hit the mark. You let me down. But that's when we're self-consumed. I'm no longer self-consumed. Those traps show up every now and then. They probably show up daily and get out of success. You know what? I need to show up at home. That's where my first success starts. I can't lead anybody if I'm not showing up and serving my wife, Carla. My daughter Ashley out in San Francisco, my daughter Maddie, my son Christian. I mean, so many men are out to save the world. They don't even have their home in the right place. For me, I'm fortunate to do what I do. I love to hoist a World Series trophy. I want my wife to walk around thinking I've married a good man. I'm proud to be married to him. I want my daughter to say I love my daddy. I want my son to say I love my dad. I mean, that's, to me, there's your success. McCutcheon took care of it best for me in that little paragraph that he wrote. You know what? Yeah. We haven't won anything significant in Pittsburgh in 7 years with a man. Based on his definition, he looked at me and thought I was successful.
Love it. Take us into the most humbling moment you've had in coaching.
Way too many.
Yeah. Where to begin?
I mean, seriously, there's way too many.
Yeah.
There was a time, the most recent, I was battling to a bad hip, a hip that needed to be replaced. I didn't get it operated on before the season. I tried to get through the season. I ended up having both my hips replaced in the winter of 2014.
Wow.
Two complete hip replacements. And I tell people, I don't know how it happens. I haven't played that hard.
Yeah.
Well, Pat, Marcus, yeah. Pete Rose, yeah. Yeah, I get it. Sure,
not Clint Hurdle.
This is just a bad draw. I got bad cards.
Sure.
I don't have it. I was battling through some things. And players, I think a lot of times they saw me battle, they saw me grind, and they respected that.
Yeah.
But the one thing, though, it was kind of like, I don't know if you ever heard Billy Butner's interview before the World Series, how he talked about it'd be really cool to play really well, but the thing you don't want to have is like a ground ball go through your leg and lose the series. He said that in an interview before that World Series.
Oh, my gosh. Google machine.
However, I had this thought with my bad hip, it would lock up on me every once in a while. When I'd go to pick my leg up, it wouldn't go. I had to stand on buses. I had to sit in that Phil Jackson chair on the plane with three cushions on it. Basically, here I am recovering alcoholic, and the only comfortable chair I have is a bar stool.
Right.
I mean, how about the irony in that?
Yeah, no doubt. That'll bring you full circle.
I had one in my office. I had one on the road. Everybody would put one in. We'd all laugh. The only thing that works, right? Yeah, that's it. How about that one? There's a bad mic.
Yeah.
But I kept saying, man, hope I don't fall down on the field. Mm-hmm. I mean, really.
Mm-hmm.
I went to make a pitching change in a game in August. I took that last step out of the dugout. My foot didn't pick up. Jeez, I hit the ground.
Oh.
You know, it was one of those times, too, where I was probably coming out too late to the chagrin of many fans. The starter should have come.
Sure.
I hit the ground face first in a dugout, major league game, lots of people, big league teams watching. I struggled to get up because that's not an easy move with a man that needed to have a hip replaced.
Right.
I get up, I dust myself out, I go out and make the change, I come back in, and I felt humble, wanting to be invisible,
yep.
Wanting to get far, far away. And I only had three players come up to me and put their arm around me and say, are you all right? I said, yeah. And you know, man, that was awesome.
Gosh.
I took that as a problem. And I was like, what?
Right.
I was a circus call. That's a radio clinic. No. We can watch you for months, man.
Yeah.
So that was huge. That was a lot of courage. It was like, you never know how other people, how many people are looking at you, how you respond to your worst moments, your most humbling moments. Those tell more about you, truthfully, than when you're hoisting something.
That's right.
Or when you just hit a walk-off or whatever.
Love that story. Oh, wow. That's a moment you'll hold on to forever. I want to walk down this a little bit. I'm going to get to the lighter side of Clint Hurdle on this one, but I want to pull back the curtain on hidden talents or hobbies. Give me some type of musical instrument. You're a karaoke guy on the side. Give me something that people don't know about you.
I love flowers.
Okay.
I love buying them. I love smelling them. I don't even like getting them. I love flowers. Don't play any musical instruments. Try the harmonica. Never pulled it off.
There you go.
My son played on the piano, played on the violin. I was just mesmerized. and grateful for people that can do that. However, I can hunt music. I can play music as far as
exactly.
I'm a music guy. I've got over, my daughter laughs, I've got 35,000 songs in my library, either iCloud or that I can just go get on my phone or my iPad.
Oh my gosh.
Or a Sonos system at home. I am the guy when it comes to good music, and I try to stay current. I don't have anything current, but I'm a classic rock guy. The other thing, I love the beach, man. Flip flops, bathing suit, t-shirt, let's go. I don't play golf anymore. I got two young kids.
Yeah.
I don't fish anymore. I went through a divorce. Back to my first marriage, and I think my fishing gear got thrown in the lake. Never fished again.
How about that?
I'll do it. I love watching my, I have a special needs daughter. I love watching her dance.
Yeah.
Because inside her mind, she's dancing like Lady Gaga. And you know what? It don't look like that, but inside her mind, she's my boy. Retired from ball at the age of 4. T-ball. He said, Dad's too intense. I'm out. He's been out ever since. He's been a graphic art design. He plays karate.
Wow.
Practically, he practices karate, tennis. tremendous singer, painter. Wow. He writes. He's 13. He's a Renaissance man. My oldest daughter, it works for a company now that networks for building relationships, Ashley in San Francisco, finding athletic opportunities for kids coming out of high school. It used to be called Coach U. It's called something different now. Jerry Jones company bought it. I love watching my kids.
Yeah.
I love watching the kids I coach every day. Those are my hobbies and my coins. I love to read. I'm a voracious reader. We actually had Ryan Holiday, the author of Ego is the Enemy.
Yes.
And the Object of the Day. So I'm constantly trying to learn from others. I'm a voracious reader. I mean, when I'm my downtime, I'm reading. I'm listening to music. I'm with my family. And every once in a while, I like to sit somewhere quiet when nobody else is around.
Give me your top three songs. You're stranded on that beach with flip-flops and a Hawaiian shirt. You got three songs that are on constant replay. What do you got?
First one's Grand Funk Railroad, We're an American Band. Actually, you can Google this one up. I got YouTube. We both been dancing to it in the dugout last year.
I'm going to find it.
It's pretty intense. Somebody was playing at the golf tournament park series the other day, a song by Free, circa 1975, All Right Now.
Okay.
And then Green Grass and High Tides by the Outlaws. Those would be the three.
There it is.
No, we're not good. Always listen to them.
What about three books? You got three books on that beach. What books are you taking with you?
That's going to be a hard one.
Yeah.
The Bible.
Yeah.
One of my first leadership books I read a long time ago was called The Speed of Trust by Stephen Covey, the dad. Fantastic read about building an organization, leadership principles. Just a fantastic read. That's two. Gosh, I know so many authors on the call, and everybody can say, man, you didn't mention my name on the podcast. Bro, keep trying. Right now, probably in the last 10 years, Legacy by James Clear.
I knew you were going to
get that one.
Yes, got it.
Go get that one.
Speed of Trust. I'm going to have to add that one to the bank of books that I've got here in the office. I know one I'll just offer up to you as Help the Helper. And I've started uncovering that a little bit. Really talks about servant leadership. It also goes into vicarious joy and another success, mudita, which is a really neat concept. So just something to throw in your bank to look to add to Help the Helper. I want to go into this, man. Funny
text
stories. I'll do it. I'll send you a picture of it. Funniest stories from over the years. Give me one really good story. Like, you think about it right now and you'll hang up the phone. You'll think about it again and you'll crack up. What do you got for me?
I was telling a story the other day, which is a crazy story that was, it was one of my go-tos. The day had come when I was interviewing for the Rangers, hitting coach John Daniels, the general manager. I knew John Daniels was an intern for the Rockies back when I was a hitting coach. I knew John Daniels was an Ivy League grad. I knew John Daniels, smart kid. He took over the radar gun operation for us in Colorado, probably circa 2001, 2000.
Okay.
And I can remember some turbulence, seeing pitches and velocities coming up, and they weren't matching up, and the hitters are going, I like that, because, you know, they look at everything.
Of course.
And the other team is like, hey, you can see people throwing their hands up and watching velocities and all gun hunters going on. And it just wasn't matching up. Before you know it, these guys are, I'm the hitting coach. You know, it's my responsibility. And I gotta go in after the game. I said, hey, running the radar. John said, I am. I said, what do you got? He goes, my gosh. He goes, it's going too fast. It's almost like the yips for a player. He'd be like, see what I want to push? I hit the wrong thing. There's two pitches. The game's fast. You know what? Divine guidance. I said, okay, I put my arm out. I said, listen, here, I'm going to go get you my pitching. I'm going to go get you my nets and the pitchers. I'm going to go get you my playbook. My hitting coach handbook. Mm-hmm. So when the pitcher comes in, you'll see the three, four pitches he's got. You'll see the velocities they fall into. Use this to help you. And, oh, my God. He goes, oh, are you kidding me? Yeah, because we're embarrassing ourselves.
Yeah, right. We need to make
a
change.
They don't know who you are, but they're looking at me, and I'm getting yelled at. Yeah. This is all about me right now, not getting yelled at anymore, and getting the hitters off my backside, getting them all landed.
That's right.
I'm down off my back. They're riding me like a mule. You take care of it. We'll work together. We'll pull this off. So he pulls it off. and little maybe you know in that interview process as we're talking, that situation comes back up. Now, she's, can you imagine what might have happened in that interview process, or if you want to be in the interview process?
Right.
Try to walk into brass hitting coach and just unloaded on this guy.
That's right.
And that was the start of the transition of the game with analytics, of younger, smarter men. Maybe they played, maybe they didn't, getting involved in the game. This guy's one of the best general managers in the game. He's a dear friend of mine. He's a good man. I love him. When we had that conversation, you want to talk about a laugh.
Oh, my God.
There I am. I've already been a big league manager, and I'm sitting here interviewing for hitting coach. John, we talk about that. I'm going, no. There's a lesson to be learned from everybody.
That's
when
a fact.
You have an opportunity, if sometimes it's much more important to be kind rather than to be right.
I love it. I got two more for you, man, because I know time is of the essence. But if you could look at the qualities of the best players, the best teammates, people you've been around in baseball, what's it look like behind the curtain of those people? Like, when you really hold them up, what are the qualities that seem to come out from the best of the best?
Well, the first one is they make everybody around them better, and they want to. They have grit. They have unwavering work ethic. They believe in the process will take care of the result. They have a growth mindset, not a fixed mindset. They have a skill set that's very unique. There's a lot of talented players that don't turn out to be elite.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people with skills that are above average that turn out to be Hall of Famers. It's when the rubber hits the road is that grit. That unwavering faith that we've got this, I'll be able to do this, and to be last to count on others. You know, it doesn't have to be done.
Last thing I got for you, dude, what's the best advice you've been given? And then also, what other advice do you have for coaches? You've got youth, high school, travel baseball, college coaches, pro guys, listen to this. The best advice that you've been given that's changed everything, but then what else would you offer the guys paying attention to this show?
Well, you know, the best advice, I mean, there's been different times, different periods of getting great advice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can remember a pivotal point in my young managerial career was invest in your people because it's a game of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You develop a relationship, it develops energy. You develop energy, it develops effort. You develop effort, it develops work ethic, and you develop work ethic, that develops a really good play. That's where you want to get to. But lately, I'm at the age of 60. I'm going to more funerals than I am weddings.
Mm-hmm.
I walked a man through hospice in the last 3 weeks, his hospice options. Mm-hmm. In the last 2 years, I've gone to 4 funerals. 2 high school classmates, really best friends of mine. And I've walked away with something I'm sharing with everybody right now. Life is life and living is special. Don't miss the second part. You're going to get the first part no matter what. The thing I'd share with the coaches out there, remember the people that you couldn't get enough of, that you loved playing for, and pull those characteristics and make sure those are in play. You want to be a coach of attraction. You want to be a coach they can't wait to see. You want to develop a culture and a dugout and a clubhouse that they can't wait to get there tomorrow. Don't be the oh no coach. We've all had them.
Mm-hmm.
The minute this guy walks in the room so said your way, you drop your head and go, oh no. Right then that guy. Don't be the oh no coach.
That is the exclamation point on 55 minutes well spent with you, Clint. I'm so gracious, you know, and flattered, man. You gave us time, and I'm humbled that we had the opportunity to do this. I'm really thankful that you're out there in the baseball community, man, as a man of faith, but more importantly, a guy that really gets it across a lot of fronts, man. And I know it took a wicked route to get there, man, but just your story unfolding here on today's podcast is going to be powerful for our coach. It's been powerful for me. So obviously, thank you. We wish you and the Pirates the very best, my man, and I look forward to staying in touch and look forward to catching up with you again real soon.
You keep catching them all. Thank you. I'm honored to serve and I'm humbled to help.
Thanks so much for dialing into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast and checking out another one of our Dugout Chatter episodes. Here at the American Baseball Coaches Association, we're here to serve coaches around the world. So let us know how we can help you out. Head over to our website, abca.org, for more information. Find out about our membership benefits. Plus, we want to make sure you're following us on Twitter, at abca1945. Also, feel free to reach out to me directly if I can help you out in any way,
at Coach Sheets 3 on Twitter or by email Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at ABCA.org. We'd love to hear from our loyal members, plus prospective ones as well. Continue to find ways to keep growing this great game together. So as always, coaches, thank you for listening in and staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Until next week, coaches, keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging yourself inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.